This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome back onto this edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us today. And on today's podcast, we get to share another fantastic story. And normal service resumes after our sort of slight break in format. And I've received some great feedback about my chat with my business partner, Lindsay Parry. I hope you enjoyed it too. And I just wanted to give you a heads up. If you haven't listened to those two podcasts yet, go back to listen to it. But if you are looking for help on your triathlon journey as well, I'd really suggest you check out what we are doing over at coachparry.com. The URL to get to if you want to get yourself our launch discount. The website is thekonaedge.com/coaching. And the good news is, we also, as because I own the Kona Edge and because I'm a partner at coachparry.com, we're going to give you an additional 20% discount. So at the moment, we're running a 20% special with our launch deal that ends at the end of this month, at the end of October. But on top of that, if you use the coupon code KONA at checkout, you'll get yourself an additional 20% off. So right now, you can get 40% off. And as long as you stay a member, that's the price you'll be locked in at. So go check it out. I think it is phenomenal value for money. The people who are on it and the athletes that are using the platform are absolutely loving it. I'm one of them. I can tell you now, I built what I was looking for. So I am so, so excited by it. You get access to the coaches, training programs from sprint right through to full Ironman. Help at your fingertips in the forums with our coaches. You're definitely not going to get better value for money. I can tell you that much. So go check it out. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching and use the coupon code KONA at checkout to get an additional 20% discount. Coming up on today's podcast, we touch base with Tim Ballantyne to find out how he got into the sport of triathlon. Welcome back onto the Kona Edge. We head down under to Australia to catch up with our next guest, Tim Ballantyne. Tim, welcome onto the podcast.
G'day, Brad. I'll start with a g'day, the old cliche Australian saying, hey?
Absolutely, mate. Where in Oz are you is home?
I'm on the Sunshine Coast, so I've moved around a little bit the last little while from Melbourne, but it's a little chilly down there, so came back north and got some fairly... famous triathlete neighbours getting around here at the right time of the world. So, yeah, mate, it's a great place to live up here.
It's not just a great place to live, it's a great place to train. You mentioned some fairly famous triathletes who base themselves there. It's, yeah, there are worse places to live in the world, Tim.
Mate, you really have to pinch yourself. There's some rides you do here and they start to get a little bit old and then you kind of have to... Well, the magpies will slap you from time to time at the moment, but like you really do have to pinch yourself because it is. Oh, look, I run some camps here, and it's paradise to be honest. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Melbourne gets a bit chilly, and I think Australia is very similar to where I am here in South Africa as well. Sure. That it's very conducive to being outdoorsy at times of the year, but where you are, I mean, you can pretty much train all year round, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's right. Not to Cairn, Melbourne, because that's probably still home and always will be. I've spent, 25 years of my life there, so it's still very much home. But, even for what I do for a living, which is a full-time endurance coach, it probably makes a lot more sense to be in the epicenter. It's a bit like, if you're into the tech world, you're better off in Silicon Valley, that sort of stuff. So you come to the hub. So like the Boulder of Australia in a way.
Absolutely. Tim, before we get on to the coaching full time, you haven't always been a coach. I mean, you have a sort of different background into this, but let's talk about how you got into the sport first, and then we'll talk about that evolution into coaching. Tell me a little bit about how you got into triathlon.
Yeah, sure. I suppose, a lot of triathletes... they have stories where they overcome a lot of struggle or they have a lot of adversity stories. And I certainly don't have that. I was always sporty at school. It's in a way a typical modest Australian. I don't feel comfortable talking about myself all that often, but, like any good age group triathlete, I'll do it for an hour. But, it's a – look, I love to compete. I'm quite a competitive person, and that sort of all went through all my life. I was an only child, though, so, you know, I'd probably compete against myself most of the time. There's no sibling rivalry or anything like that. I played a lot of sport, but I spent, you know, the most of the last part of my years at school in a cast or on crutches. I had a lot of knee operations playing football, and some really simple injuries. So I started university, and that definitely took me away from fitness, if I'm being honest. I sort of fell away from sport there. And then I got a job out of university on the Gold Coast, which is in Queensland. And, you know, that really spawned for me, you can't but help be active in a place that is just, the sun's up at 4:30, it's high in the sky. It's just such a great environment to train. So I really fell into running again. If I'm going swim, bike or run, for me it's run, swim and bike. It's just, you know, kind of that's my go-to. So we lived on the marathon course, the Gold Coast Marathon, which you might have heard of. It's massive. And for the first sort of 3 or 4 years, I observed it with a coffee standing there watching. And, you know, I was like, man, if that guy can do it, like, you know, surely I can give it a go. So, yeah, signed up and trained for that, and that was 2010. I talk like this was 20 years ago, but it's all happened pretty fast, okay, to be frank, Brad. And I did a 3:54 in my first marathon, and I was trying to break 4 as like the, it's still the sub 4, you know, and that's still probably, including Kona, is probably the most pain I've ever been in any sort of event. Like, I had no strength and conditioning. I had the dorky iPod on the arm, the long things that would get tangled. It was great. Like, you know, I really genuinely cherish that. And, yeah, but my knees soon after that were pretty unhappy. I have no meniscus cartilage at all in my left knee. But luckily my wife, is a strength and sports scientist. So she's like, get on the bike. Get some strength through it. I think you can still run. So went down, bought a road bike. Tell me if I'm rabbiting on too much here. And sort of found triathlon. I could swim. You know, I swam all through my junior years thanks to my mum taking me 5 days a week. So I had that. And, you know, that's a bit of a one-wood for me now to swim. So I'm sort of lucky, very lucky in a way. I've had some lucky breaks. So, yeah, just trained for my first triathlon. For about 6 months, joined a squad, got a coach. You know, I didn't really know what I was doing. How should I say? You really fall in love with the people of triathlon. That sounds corny, and people, you know, may vomit at hearing that. But it's the people of triathlon. They really sort of suck you in, and your friendship group changes pretty quickly. I gotta say, you know, it's going out at 10 p.m. I'd rather be up at 4 a.m., you know, so that's something that was really big. So the people's a big draw for me at that point.
I love that. I think my wife needs to have a chat to your wife, because my left knee's a bit sore and I need a new road bike, so.
That's very funny. Yeah, look, it's a pretty handy resource, I got to say. Yeah, she keeps me honest, that's for sure. So look, my first try was an Olympic distance. It's, you know, and this is kind of, for people that are listening, this is how quickly it can sort of happen. You can genuinely go from a total rookie to, you know, if you work hard and do all the things that we'll go through, you can get there. Like, you really can get there, and I really push that. So I turned up for this Olympic. It had rained all night. It was in April, so it was late in the Australian tri season, and it was freezing, and I didn't really know much. So I turned up to the swim in my Speedos. This was 2013, so like, this is only 5 years ago. Turned up, I'm like, what are all these? Like, I thought you only wore a wetsuit when you go surfing, like, you know. So the swim started, and this may come off arrogant, but I came out of the water first and running up the beach, and I did look over my shoulder. I'm like, did I cut the course? Or like, you know. So you know, I got on the bike with my running legs and eventually got swallowed up and then ran pretty hard. And I think I finished, I'm just going to say fourth, maybe a bit better. But, and I was hooked, man. Like, this was like the best thing ever. It was just a shame because it was like the last race of the year. So I was like, you know, and typical me, I'm like, I'm going to go do an Ironman now. And then just step it up to an Ironman. So, yeah, it was exciting. I still smile when I talk about it because if that comes through, I'm pretty passionate about this sport.
Absolutely, and I love the fact that you just decided, you know what, I've done the first one, I loved it, let's go all in. And there is a danger in that, Tim, let's be honest. We've all seen athletes who go full on and it's literally balls to the wall, and they stick around for a season or two and they're gone, they've burnt themselves out. How have you managed to stay fresh and still so passionate? Not that you've been in the sport that long, but you're still dead keen.
Yeah. Mate, I'm pretty lightly raced. Like, if you want to jump right ahead, like I try my very best to not do two Ironmans in the 1 12-month period. You know, I see, and certainly this is not for everyone. Obviously, some people have the ability, but I decided very early that I want to do this for a very long time. I love it, and so I definitely didn't want to go to that burnout range. That said, my first 5 years was pretty big, you know, a couple of Konas and things like that. So it was big, but there was space, Brad. And, you know, like post-race, I'd take time. I'd put on weight. I love good food. I love it. But I certainly have the ability to flick that switch in my brain and just cut it off, because it kind of comes back to the competitiveness. Like, I drive people nuts, but I'll do everything I can to be the best that I can be. So, that's kind of how I've probably, to this point, still got very much the hunger to get better.
What does it take to be a competitive age grouper? Not just on the local scene where you're racing local IMAs, but getting to Kona and being competitive in Kona. Obviously, you're coaching now, so you've got both sides of it. You're coaching athletes to get there, but you've also done it yourself. So what does it take? What's the secret to being a world-class age grouper?
Well, there's not, I mean, how long have we got? Like, there's not one thing, obviously. But I think that if you step back, I'm going to be careful not to put my coach on hat too much here, but if you step back and you just go macro for a little bit, you've got to have three things working for you. And this is being said, but your professional, personal and performance, the three P's, that tripod that everyone talks about, but it's so real. And if we're talking about Kona qualification, so, you know, just finishing an Ironman in itself is a monster achievement. But these days, with the level of age groupers, like, you could basically call it a professional age group category. Like, it's pretty crazy now. So you can't have, in my humble opinion, you can't have all three of those aspects of your life roaring on all cylinders and expect to get there. There's exceptions to the rule. I'm sure there's people out there that have done it and are probably saying, oh, but I did that and that's fine. But if we're playing the numbers and we're just playing the sensible option, you know, you've just got to make sure you've got that right. You need support. You need support at home. You need to have hard conversations because, and I drive this to my athletes, Brad, like people fluff the term about balance. Trying to qualify for Kona, there ain't much balance there. It's a very, very selfish undertaking, in my opinion, but it does inspire and it does give back in the other way. So, like, it's a special thing. So there's a lot of aspects, Brad, you know, race choice, just stepping it out, being healthy and fit and fast and not fast-tracking that process. Race choice is a big one for me, and being really smart about that. And looking at the calendar.
Let's talk about that, because that's something that pops up every now and again, but we haven't dug too deep into it here on the podcast. And, and it's interesting because as much as it's horses for courses, and if you are a big guy, you don't necessarily want to go and find an Ironman where there's 2,000 feet of climbing in an Ironman bike course, for instance. But you also don't know who's going to arrive on the day. So it's all good and well choosing a race that suits you physically. How do you go about choosing races for you and for your athletes?
Well, first thing's play to your strengths. like absolutely play your strengths. So for me, I love the heat. I genuinely love racing in the heat. And I've only been riding a bike for 6 years, which may seem like a lot. It's not all that much, really. So I'm still very much developing that part of my swim, bike, run, that style. So for me, you know, I'm a strong swimmer, Brad, too. So, you know, non-wetsuit, and if it's rough and non-wetsuit, happy days. Like, that's a nice sort of head start there. So, yeah, like, if you're looking at I would say, you know, don't decide 16 weeks out you want to qualify for Kona if you're trying to get there the first time. I would seriously look at it as a 12-month thing and build up strategically. You know, there's a few rules about when to arrive. So even in Australia, we have an Ironman in Cairns, which has a lot of slots. You know, there's slot allocations, all those sorts of things. You have athletes that travel from Melbourne in the depths of winter where they're getting up in the morning and it's zero. And then they go to the Ironman Cairns and it's, you know, they get up and it's 17 and it reaches 27, 28 during the day. That's gonna hurt you. It's gonna have an effect. But if you arrive early, like I'm talking 10 days, and not everyone can afford that, that's fine. But if you're trying to get to the big island, you invest so much. Think about how much you invest and time, just that extra 4 days, 4 nights accommodation. You know, man, it could make a really, I've seen it as a coach. Some guys better prepared, but they just can't get there because of work for some reason, and that's fine. They get there on the Wednesday and they just, that last 12 Ks on the run, they just feel it. So, and then the time zone thing, obviously, Brad, too, when you're traveling, like, and adjusting. So I have a rule, you know, one hour for every day in time is a pretty good rule, I think. Again, it doesn't work for everyone, but they're just a few things I'd say that to be really conscious of, but be clever, you know, play to your strengths. There's so many races now, right? So yeah, you know, you can, you know, at the moment there's Ironmans on at the moment for qualification where technically a lot of the fields that the good top end are doing Kona, right? So you can say that perhaps the age group fields are depleted at the moment. Controversial maybe, but that's the reality. So you can be smart.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, as far as the moving to coaching, I mean, you mentioned when you started investing in a coach yourself. Is that something you did early on? And what was the progression to you actually becoming a coach yourself?
Yeah, sure. Was it everyone's dream to do something that they love? And I was listening to one of your podcasts recently, and I think you're transitioning yourself to trying to make the podcast full-time. Yep. And what a dream, you know, like you get to do genuinely, if that hasn't come across already, I love triathlon, I love endurance, like it can be ultra running, anything like that. You know, I've coached a Molokai crossing, that like I like that side, I like the challenge, and I think I've got a knack of getting the best out of people. I think I've got a knack there, so it was just, is it a risk? Obviously, there's a risk in it, you know, when you've got a young family and a mortgage, but yeah, I think it's worth it. And so far, it's been great, man. It's a dream job. Like, not to rub it in, but it's crazy. Like, it blows me away, actually.
What were you doing before coaching full-time?
Yeah, I was in corporate space, so management marketing, and I was a CEO for a period of time there as well, so I was accountable to a lot of people, and I love that. I learned so much from some great mentors in that space. But, you know, you just, like anything in life, you just move around and sort of landed on my feet here at the moment.
Tim, let's talk about, and this can tie into to what you're doing as a coach as well. When should an athlete get a coach? And what should they look for in a coach?
Yeah, sure. There's different, see, Brad, like, there's very different sorts of coaches. So, to try and explain it, like, you know, you've got good squad coaches. So if you're a beginner, I would suggest, a good squad, you know, because you've got that more hands-on style of coaching, and there's genuine interaction there as well, where you've got that, you know, sort of feedback. But potentially, you know, if you're looking to get to Kona and you've got a little bit of experience, or you understand sort of the fundamentals, you can sort of lift your eyes a little and cast your eyes around the globe, frankly, is where I sort of come in. I think with technology, this is not a sponsor plug or anything, but things like Training Peaks, stuff like that, they're just unbelievable. Training tools, instant feedback, Skype, FaceTime. It's so easy to communicate. I have athletes send me swimming videos, running videos all the time. So it's sort of, you've got to work out what you're comfortable with. Some people would be very uncomfortable having a coach that's on the other side of the world, and I get that, and that's fine. But certainly I found that, you know, with it's 2018, like, you can have access to coaches anywhere, really. And I'm really, for me, not everyone can make squad, Brad. You know, like, squads are very much, you know, you do your 5, 6, 7 sessions a week. Well, for the guy that lives in Singapore or Malaysia or Dubai and travels twice a week, well, guess what? Squad's not really for him or her. They just need ultimate flexibility in their program to work around that. And there's a lot of busy people now that travel a lot. And, yeah, I've really found a real niche there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think and the better technology gets, I think the easier it becomes from both sides, from a coach and from an athlete's perspective. Tim, for you personally, I mean, you mentioned you've been to Kona a couple of times. What's still sort of on the bucket list from a competitiveness nature for you personally? What do you still want to achieve in the sport?
That's a really good question. There's a lot of things. Ultimately, you know, everyone, I'd like to win my age group in Kona. I took another step last time. Male 34 is pretty strong. So I finished 15th. And, yeah, I think part, you know, if I'm being honest, you know, part of the reason to move back north was, I just wasn't able to put enough road miles in training on the bike. And I suffered for it, you know. So yeah, this playground of training up here, I'm spending a lot of time on the road again. And I was joking, actually, I've got a couple of races coming up. I'm doing the half in Malaysia in November and then going to Sri Lanka in February. But I've never actually prepared for a half. A half's always been part of a full prep. And, you know, having some conversations with some coaches that aren't officially my coach, but just in coaching circles, they're like, well, why don't you try and nail 90Ks before you try and nail 180? And it's like, well, you know, that's the like, of course that makes sense. I would tell that to my athletes, but, you know, you don't, you know, you have your athlete hat and your coach hat and you make mistakes, you know, so that made a lot of sense. So, yeah, definitely, yeah, still a lot of unfinished business, Brad. Yeah, for sure.
Is that something you struggle with, Tim? It's almost like the doctor's kids who are always sick and the mechanic's car that never works.
That's right.
You might be a coach, but are you coachable as an athlete? How do you get that juggle right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I'm coachable. I'd be difficult. I don't have a coach at the moment, I'd be difficult because I would be fairly critical, I'd imagine. But also I'd be very good at letting go as well, and trusting. And if you truly want that relationship to work, there's a lot of trust you've got to shift. And, when I come across them, I'll let you know.
And you use such a important word in a coaching relationship, trust. We see it so often in what I'm doing outside of the Kona Edge, and I'm sure you do too as a coach, where the last thing you want is athletes second guessing what you, not that it has to be this, I'm telling you what to do, you need to do it, but if you're going to be second guessing everything your coach is telling you to do, maybe it's time to reassess as an athlete that coaching relationship. You need to find someone whose philosophy you buy into, and then go all in. And if you're not sure why you're doing something, ask why, ask for clarity, but you don't want a coach to justify why you want to be doing what you want to be doing.
Yeah, you got to tread this really fine line. You clearly don't want to be a dictator, obviously, because, man, I learn more from my athletes than I do any book or anything, really. So, but it does help. Now, not saying I'm a good athlete, but it does help if you've done it as an athlete. I think that gives people belief that, well, this guy kind of knows what he's doing. It's not the be-all, end-all, definitely, but it helps, like, let's call it street cred. You've just got the kind of, you've got a few runs on the board, so I think that definitely helps initially. But you can't just, it's like any relationship, Brad, like, you can't just expect trust in the first week. You've got to build that. So you've got to be very honest early and basically lay down that it's going to take time. We're such an impatient group these days, but man, strength endurance, guess what endurance is? It's long.
Yep.
So it just takes a long time. It takes longer for others, obviously. But yeah, I think if you just keep consistent in your messaging, and I test often myself as an athlete, I test often, and I test my athletes often, and that'll give you the most direct feedback in terms of how you're progressing. And then you start to tap between the ears, and that ultimately on race day for guys trying to get to Kona, I don't know how deep you've gone on the mindset of an athlete, but it's a big, it's not so much a catch cry at the moment, but you know, there's probably, in any Ironman, there's a multiple chances to qualify, but between the ears, that's so powerful.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Tim, because you mentioned like the age group that you're in and how competitive it is. And let's be honest, there are lots of really good age groupers out there, but the thing that separates the good from the really good is exactly what you're saying, is it's the guys who can push through when they don't feel like pushing through. What does it take to become mentally tough as an age grouper where you're at the point where you're looking at the guy next to you on race day and it's between who can hold on the longest mentally?
Yeah, making mistakes is a big thing. I think that those scars and like building that callus of tolerance in training and just again, like that belief that you can build in training as an athlete, so doing it, so you know, doing long runs off the bike in training, I still can't quite get my head around coaches and athletes in an Ironman prep only running up to 10Ks on the bike. It works for some, of course, but I don't quite get that. I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with literally doing a 32K run off a long ride in a prep. That belief that gives you that you can do it and you can hang and test you in your nutrition, I think belief is just a huge thing. And then going right back to my school days, those competitive juices, you know, it's a, yeah, it's pretty powerful.
I mean, you have to be competitive. There's no two ways about it. I'm interested, being an only child, where did that competitiveness come from? I grew up in a family with an older brother, and he hated losing. I hated losing, and that's where it came from for us. But where did it come from for you?
Oh, my best mate's my old man, and we have ask any of my mates, you know, we have a really unique, we just have an awesome relationship. A bit like how I was touching about getting the best out of people, like I think he just knew my buttons. He was just a great influence. And, I was lucky. I went to a really good school, great sporting program. And maybe people are just born with, you know, a certain way too. Like, you know, you can just be made a certain way, as well. And, I get angry when I don't, but you don't win it all. It doesn't, just because you're competitive doesn't mean you win all the time. But, I like to race. I train to race, Brad. I like the lifestyle of triathlon, but certainly when I'm training, it's tracking towards an event.
What would you say to somebody who's just getting started in the sport, that's just sort of maybe done their first sprint or Olympic and is thinking about doing their first Ironman and possibly going beyond and looking at possibly qualifying? What advice would you give to someone starting out in the sport today?
I would say don't do what I did and ride with underpants under your bike nicks for the first 12 months. I did that. Don't do that. Don't run out of transition with your helmet on. Don't do that. But in all seriousness, this sport, if you take a short-term view to it and you just want a quick sugar hit, so to speak, it'll spit you out pretty quickly. And you'll tick your, if you're a bucket lister, that's fine. But if you want to progress and get better, you've got to be prepared to invest time. And when I say time, I mean season on season. One of the things I love about the sport is it does give back to you what you put in. I mean, you can have bad luck, you can have a flat tire, we've all been there. You can have stomach cramps, we've all been there. But if you prepare well, then 9 times out of 10 you'll probably have a good race. So I like that. you kind of are in control of, you know, it's an individual sport. We throw around team sport, and it kind of is because you need the support. But when you're on that start line, old mate's not going to push you on the bum. He's going to grab your leg most likely. So it's on.
Tim, and then just to wrap up, I mean, if people want to find out more about your coaching business and reach out to you, how can they get hold of you?
Probably the best place is actually to go to my blog. So it might interest people. I'm a big blogger, and I've blogged about my last two Konas, my last two qualifiers, videos. I shared all my Training Peaks data. So you can maybe put that in your link, because my spelling of my surname is a bit complex, but timballantyne.com. And there's so much content there, and I'm blogging at the moment about a few races, so there's some pretty good stuff there, and there's a contact thing, so cool.
I'll link through. You can catch that link below the podcast play or in the show notes this episode as well. Tim, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next week. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Thanks, Brad. Pleasure.
And that's a wrap for this edition of the show. Thank you very much to Tim for sharing his journey with us. He'll return again next week, Thursday, as we record this, to share some swimming advice with us. Before I go, though, don't forget, if you'd like to, or if you need help on your triathlon journey, be sure to head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And you can find out all the details about our brand new Coach Parry online training platform, where you get access to our entire library of training programs, not just triathlon, but there's running and cycling as well. But from a triathlon point of view, from sprint right the way through to Ironman distance, you get access to all five of our coaches as well. So if you've got any questions, you can pop them into the forum and get the help you need. Weekly office hours, live Q&A calls. You're definitely not going to get better value for money for what you're paying for it. And because you're a loyal Kona Edge listener, and because I'm the boss here at the Kona Edge, we're giving you an extra 20% discount, okay, on top of our initial launch price. So all you need to do is use the discount coupon Kona at checkout to get that 20% discount. That's Kona at checkout. And the URL to get to is thekonaedge.com/coaching. That's where you can get all the details. The link is in the podcast player right below this podcast. You can click straight through, go check it out. But like I said at the start of the show, I am extremely proud of what we've built over there, and we'd love for you to be a part of it. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.